I need to know what I'm searching for, right? Because if we're searching for a straight out investment property that's going to be fairly passive, hands off, generating a monthly paycheck kind of thing, I'll be looking at totally different properties than if we're looking for something that you'll be able to use as a holiday home as well. And if we're looking for an Airbnb operation where you want to be hands on and making potentially, it's very seasonal and fluctuating, but potentially higher yield than a long term investment. Then we'd be maybe looking at something different. So we need to be
I
guided in
see.
the right, but we can be guided in a few directions and run a few searches with a few agents on multiple fronts. But maybe before we decide if we're focusing on one at a time or branching out, maybe give me a rough idea of the total budget that you'd potentially like to invest first. Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so first off, before we get into this episode, a quick update on our next summit, which is scheduled for 18-19 April 2026, Saturday, Sunday. We've just locked in the venue, and it's not Tokyo International Forum this time around. We've upgraded to the amazing Pullman Hotel near Tamachi Station in Tokyo. It's a phenomenal venue, and we hope to make it the permanent home of the summit moving forward. You can check out the photos on their website or Google Maps. And if you haven't booked your accommodation yet, hold off for a couple more weeks if you can. We're hoping to have a special deal on hotel rooms at the conference itself, which would, of course, be super convenient and a bit luxurious, too, if I do say so myself. So watch this space for that. And more importantly, we've opened up pre-registration for early bird really early this time. So your discounted tickets, you can now sign up for those. We'll link to the registration form in this episode's show notes, and you can also find it at the very top of our homepage on nippontradings.com. That's NIPPON Tradings with an S, Nippon Tradings, all one word, .com. We're still way ahead of the event, but the early bird discount will go away as soon as we've got the scheduled speakers list and ticketing page up and running, which could be as early as next month or very early January. So if you already know you'll be attending, either in person or online, there's no reason to wait and potentially miss out on the discount. And of course, flights would normally be pricier as we get closer to the date as well. So if you're coming in from out of town, you definitely want to get your tickets booked sooner rather than later. Super excited about this one, promising to be bigger and better, as has been the case subsequently year after year since we started holding this awesome event. Looking forward to seeing you all there at the Pullman or in the streaming room on 18, 19th April. Now for today's episode. This is a conversation that I've had with a savvy US investor who's already active in the real estate space, specifically in short-term rentals over there. And as he's looking to expand his portfolio to Japan, he wanted to have a chat and understand his options better. So long-term versus medium versus short-term rentals in Japan, how licensing, due diligence, and management work here, how we work, and specifically, when do our services make sense for investors as opposed to other service providers that may be available here,
what our professional service providers network looks like, and what's their ability to also purchase a holiday home in the country. So we talk a lot about what they should be buying and where, what their budget might allow in each of these locations, and the importance of having focus and clear criteria when it comes to property research and selection. We also talk about rents, the ability to raise the rent throughout the portfolio's life cycle, what draws people to invest here in the first place, why short or medium-term properties require more hands-on attention from owners, how to find and work with short-term stay property managers, the limitations, but also the stability of investing in condo units as opposed to owning entire structures. And that also led us to discuss the topic of buying whole apartment buildings for flexibility and running them potentially as hybrid long/short/medium/commercial rentals, the average yields for all of these properties and how we calculate those yields, and then also a bit about the intricacies of investing in single family homes for those people, for people who are that way inclined. And finally, we also discuss exit strategies and liquidity. So a real deep dive on all things related to investment properties in Japan. I think you'll really like this one if you're that way inclined yourselves. Have a listen, and I'll see you again on the other side. Okay, so let me just bring up your email. Give me a second. Joe. That's a different Joe. Oh, there you are. Okay. Okay, so you referred to us by Emil. You've been researching the market the past 2 years, already sold investment properties for Airbnb or long-term rentals. That's a totally different kettle of fish there, though.
Yeah, it was short-term. I think we are very, very open-minded.
Well, short-term in Japan is complex, so it requires licensing, and the licensing would depend on whether that particular municipality is more or less strict. I can put you in touch with a short-term stay research and management company that will look into the feasibility of getting a license for each particular listing that will flow to them. But they will charge 22,000 yen for the first property they research in each municipality. And if you have subsequent ones in the same municipality, then 11,000 yen for the rest. And based on that report, that's if short-term stay is a must. And then based on that report, we can decide on which property we're digging into deeper, because anything else that we'll do beyond that will cost more. So if we send somebody on a viewing trip, that'll be a few hundred dollars. If we conduct a structural inspection, that'll be $1,000 or $2,000. So the feasibility research would be the first step if short-term stay is a must.
Okay. Yeah, I think we're quite open-minded in terms of what you recommend. And you're right, depending on which areas, whatever is more feasible is what we would do. In terms of how we found you, a little bit of backstory, I think Shu and the people that we've been watching, and I think for you, we've been watching for the past 2 years.
Very flattering.
And I think in terms of what you do, I think you guys do provide more comprehensive services than a lot of people. A lot of people, they're niche. And I think from the last video that I watched, I'm not sure it was from Shu or not, it's the summit that you guys had where he had interviewed Tracy and Blanca, and how Blanca does renovations and then Tracy does short term. But I think you have a little bit more tailored connections depending on which areas that we're interested in and what you find, which is why I think we wanted to really, really talk to you.
Sure, because it's our pleasure. You know, but I mean, to their credit, the reason that they're niched and we're not is because they're very hands on and we're more upper level project managing stuff, right? So we try to build a network of people, like you mentioned, in different cities doing different things. Depending on availability, they're not always there. And then either guide you in the right direction or manage them on your behalf, depending on what level of involvement you want from us.
Yeah, we definitely want something like that, is property management. Like a lot of your clients, we're from the US. So I am from California. You know, my wife and I have owned real estate, not a lot, you know, for the past, I would say, 7-8 years. And I wrote in the email, I think the initial email, in terms of what we do own is just a, you know, an eight unit apartment. Yep. Have you been to California or?
In my early teens, which was a long, long time ago.
Long time ago. Yeah. So we're from Orange County,
yep.
Which is a little bit more north of San Diego, a little bit more south of Los Angeles, closer to the beach. We're in Irvine, so we're not on the beach at all. And you probably might even get clients in Orange County that reach out to you.
So many clients in California and Hawaii, for some reason, are where we get the most from the U.S. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think California, because it's very diverse. So we're used to traveling to a lot of people in Orange County, for example, travel to Asia and they love Japan and they love Hawaii, you know, so we all kind of share that same type of belief and joy when we see places that we're willing to invest in. And I think Japan is one of those few countries, if not the only, that we would even consider investing internationally, basically because of the culture.
Major attraction, I think. Yeah. I mean, everything is documented and by the book, and no one's got their hands in your pockets. It's very Japanese, yeah.
Yeah, that's the only reason why we're even considering international is because of Japan. And we do want someone to help us manage a property if we do start with something, and we want to start with, you know, something small to medium, so that we can try to understand. So our background is, you know, we have an 8-unit in Long Beach, California. We have a 3-unit with a house in the front in Santa Ana, Orange County, and we're currently building 2 ADUs at the bottom of that 2-unit, so it's going to become a 4. And we're going to try to use part of that funds and our private funds to try to get something that you might offer or, you know, direct us in wherever that you think is best. For us, we're looking for any city that you think would work out. And we're quite open-minded in terms of looking for something that is, for example, buying something, having it be rented out long term. If you find something that is you know, from Airbnb standpoint, we don't mind short-term rental, we don't mind. Obviously, you probably get a lot of clients from California, for example, who say, hey, we want something where we can go over there, stay in it, and also when we're not there, to rent it out and make a little bit of money because we don't want it to sit there empty.
If that's the case, then yeah, we have a lot of customers doing that. And if that's the case, we'll aim for that. But you mentioned specifically investment properties. So those are not really investment properties. They're covering costs kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think covering cost is also something we are looking for. Investment property we're looking for as well. So I think it for us, we're not in a hurry. And if you find a property, we're going to keep on looking. And if it comes up and you say, hey, there is a 4-unit that is worth this much, or a 2-unit that's worth this much, or a single house that's worth this much, but I think it might be more feasible as a long term, and it's in this city, and we look at all the numbers and we look at everything, we might just go that route. But if you come across something that is, hey, this is better as a short term, this is in a better touristy area, we're willing to jump and go that avenue. So we're willing to pivot anyway.
It's depending on the property. Kind of the other way around, though. I need to know what you're searching for, right? Because if we're searching for a straight out investment property that's going to be fairly passive, hands off, generating a monthly paycheck kind of thing, I'll be looking at totally different properties than if we're looking for something that you'll be able to use as a holiday home as well. And if we're looking for an Airbnb operation where you want to be hands-on and making potentially, it's very seasonal and fluctuating, but potentially higher yield than a long-term investment, then we'd be looking at something different. So we need to be guided in the right, but we can be guided in a few directions and run a few searches with a few agents on multiple fronts, but maybe before we decide if we're focusing on one at a time or branching out, maybe give me a rough idea of the total budget that you'd potentially like to invest first.
So We want to start small and then eventually maybe even get several. So starting small would be 100,000 US. And, you know, our total budget is going to grow as the years goes on. For us, we've always loved to establish a relationship with somebody who we can just continue to work with for many years to come. That's what our goal is. And so we're starting small, something, let's say 100,000 US.
Is that including up to purchase costs or just the listing price? Purchase costs that's up to, let's say, 15% on top. Worst case, hopefully less, but worst case.
Yeah, I think that's just the amount to buy the property, and then anything beyond that, we should have the reserves for that. That's not should not be a problem.
Okay, so that's 14.5 million yen at the moment, which that first of all, that rules out small multi-unit buildings because they start at about 40-50 million yen. I mean, good ones that we could recommend would start at around 40-50 million yen.
And we actually don't mind going from 100,000 up to about 350 to 400,000 US. So the total budget, the maximum, maybe 400,000 US. But like I said, we're kind of torn, and you're right to say that we need guidance so that we can look at one avenue instead of three different avenues, because it gets very cumbersome and confusing. I think you're
not
you're
just
right
to you,
point.
But the agents will be looping in as well. Exactly. They get a bit lost, and they're Japanese, so they're even worse than you and me. They need the structure.
Yeah. So knowing that we're going from 100 to 400,000, my question to you and for us to talk is the reason why I really want to talk to you is, what do you think? You know, we have property here in Orange County. We actually want to diversify. We don't want to invest in Orange County or California as much anymore. I'm not sure if you have heard, California the past several years have put a cap on their rent increases. No. So they have now put a cap on the whole state, and now each city is trying to constrain the rent increases that were allowed. So a lot of people are leaving, investors are leaving California to go out of state.
Well,
and that's why
we're looking. Here there's no official cap, but you can't raise the rents because the economy is shrinking / stagnating. Yep. So I mean, you can raise the rent, but the tenant will just move out because everything else will be cheaper.
Yeah. We definitely understand that culture, and we understand that once you get a tenant in, they usually stay long term. You're not going to be raising rent like you do in California and the US. That we understand. And I think we're willing to make that sacrifice for the gains that we're getting because of the culture, because they tend to take care of the property more than people do here in California. Our renters, I mean, they have disregard for the rooms that they're renting, you know, and as you already know, in California, in the US, if someone goes in there and lives there and does not pay the rent and refuses to pay, you would then have to evict them. I know they do that in Japan as well, but here is more rampant.
Eviction and here is more along the lines of sending them a letter and saying, please leave, and off they go. It's not really, it's not a court enforced.
It's much easier, I'm assuming, much easier, because here is a court thing and we have to pay for it, and it just drags on for months and months. And in the end, we're down tens of thousands of dollars. Yeah. That is the reason why we're looking in Japan.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc. You definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
So we understand the nature of the stagnation of rents, the stagnation of income that you can get, and also the possibility that I can get more income if I invest in the US versus Japan, and there's more appreciation in terms of my property. But we wanted to actually look to see what the comparisons are. And we looked at a lot of numbers in the past 2 years, and we understand that it's not the greatest, but the clientele and the culture and everything made us realize that, you know what, without putting through the headache of what we're going through now, we're willing to say, hey, let's just at least get something in Japan, at least one, and see how it goes. So that's why we're torn.
I mean, the diversity and affordability and generally speaking stability is what draws people here, not necessarily super high yields or capital appreciation. Exactly. It's a different market. Yeah.
So for us, we're the same type of clients that you've been coming across. I think we just want your advice. I mean, what is your thought? Because right now we're torn between long-term versus an Airbnb versus something short-term. And the reason why we're torn, and you probably hear this a lot, is we don't go to Japan enough to know that these are the areas that we really want to invest in.
Yeah.
You know, like if I am in California, I can tell you, you know, three cities. Six cities that I don't ever want to buy anything in. In Japan, I don't know enough to even do that. So that's why we're torn. We're like,
the cities themselves would be similar. I mean, we want somewhere that's attractive for the general population. So normally, if it's your first investment, we'd normally direct you, unless you have, you know, a very high risk appetite. But otherwise, we'd normally direct you into one of the top seven cities where we know population is at least stable and hopefully growing as well. And the location within the city and the type of the property that we'll be aiming for will differ depending on the short-term stay versus long-term stay equation. So the first question I'd say is, how hands-on do you want to be? Because running an Airbnb or even a monthly rental property requires much more mental bandwidth. I mean, we'll have property managers in place, but you will be making decisions on a very regular basis, looking at vacancies versus occupancies, what's the competition doing, how much should we be charging for a room, prodding them to be more creative with their campaigns, the property managers, I mean. So it's not a full-time job, but it's very hands-on.
Yeah, I think knowing that, so you're saying the management company for those types of property, even though they do everything for you, they're going to want your input at least once a month or weekly.
Once a month, more likely, but it's more a case of, I mean, Japanese are very professional and by the book, and, you know, when they do a job, they do it very well, but they're not very proactive. So a lot of the property managers that we work with require nudging on a fairly regular basis.
I get it.
So they, I mean, if they think the property is doing all right, then, you know, they'll just leave all the ads as they are and wait for people to come in, and you'll occasionally have a month or two of vacancy or 3-4 months of vacancy. And you know, if we don't constantly monitor and make sure that they're maximizing our profits, which is crucial with a short-term stay because it's seasonal and fluctuating. When you are in high season or whatnot, you do want to make sure you're getting squeezing the most out of it, because it could be dead the rest of the year, right? So again, we need to be proactive on their behalf, and they'll do a good job once we instruct them on a regular basis. And we will do that for you, obviously, if we're managing them, but it will be more hands-on. So for us to do our job and be creative with it, we need to say, hey, this has been vacant, we think, a little bit too long. The property manager is saying that this and this and that is happening. Do you think we should go with option A, raising the rent, option B, put in some more apply? I mean, there'll be constant to-ing and fro-ing, and you will need to be on top of it. So I don't know what your employment slash business situation is. How much time do you have? It's not just time, it's just to constantly be thinking about it too.
I specifically, to be honest with you, I'm when we've started with our property for the first 3 years, we've actually managed everything on our own. We didn't have a management company. We had all the contractors, everybody just to fix a toilet. We had a plumber, we had everybody lined up. We took calls basically all the time from tenants. So we are very well aware of how hard that is. You're right, being an international property and a real estate that's in Japan, we probably don't mind from
You're not going to
managing
be
that type
calling
of
the
thing.
plumber yourself, but you will need to constantly approve quotes and prices and campaigns
Yeah,
and
we don't mind that. Yeah, that we don't mind at all. But my question is, let's say we get an Airbnb. How does that work? For example, let's say you find a property, you have a specialist in that that helps us set it up. You would help manage the property with that person, and then there's a fee
So
to us, or how does that work?
that would be up to you. But by nature of short-term stay properties, again, assuming that we're in good central locations that are attractive to international tourists. So managing this kind of property, a company has to have English capabilities because they're catering to foreign guests, right? So most of them would also be able to serve you as a foreign landlord. They can communicate with you in English directly, and they will be able, I mean, they're not going to be like a traditional Japanese realtor who doesn't know how to receive funds from overseas, and we need to hold their hand and tell them how to find their SWIFT code or whatever. So they're going to be foreigner savvy. How professional they'll be or not is a different story. So part of our job is to see when they're not doing a stellar job and try to steer them in the right direction. And then if that's chronic, then eventually we'll replace them with another. So it's up to you. I mean, we can put you directly in touch with them, see how you go, and then loop us back in if you need our support or you want to change them over. Or we can, from the get-go, do everything on your behalf and be the in-between. I mean, we're an added layer of service and an added layer of payment, so it's up to you.
I got it. So I guess the first question that my wife and I have is how much would that cost in US dollars? Because that way I don't have to convert the yen in my head. But for example, let's say we find a property, it's in a good area. And as of now, do you have a property at the top of your head that's in a decent area that could Airbnb that is a maybe 2-bedroom property? How much are those going
We
for in
don't
US?
have lists of databases of properties. We search based on each client's requirement. When you're talking about a 2-bedroom, so you can do short-term stays in a condo unit. It has to be a standalone house, and most standalone house, or you we didn't get to the budget part yet, or you could own the entire building. Then you can have multiple units that will have, studios or 1-bedroom or 2-bedroom. But you'll need to own the entire structure to do short-term stays. So whether it's a house or a small building, you'll have to own it. Houses start normally at around 3 bedrooms plus living, dining, kitchen. So it's not going to be a 2-bedroom if it's a house. If it's a multi-unit building, then it could be any size units, yeah.
And then for that 3-bedroom house, the Airbnb, have you done a recent Airbnb setup for international clients recently or?
Yes, but those are so the houses most of our clients are, I say most, but we don't have that many. I think we have 4 or 5 clients who are doing Airbnb at their property, and they're in touch directly with the property manager. So we're not involved. I can tell you, do you mean how much the property costs or how much the management costs?
Like for example, what ballpark figure, how much did they have to pay US dollars for something like that? The property.
The ones that went with our recommendations, meaning in a location that's attractive to short-term stay guests and is at least 20 years or younger, not older than that, they would start at around 15 to 20 million yen, depending on, again, the closer you get to central Tokyo, Fukuoka, Osaka, the more they'll cost, but if they're a little bit more suburban, then probably start at 15, 20 million yen. So that's
how much US is
that? That's about 100,000 to 120,000 US.
Yeah, okay.
But those are the best profiles for maximizing your short-term stay profits. If you want to maximize your short-term stay profits, I'd go with a much more central location, which would mean you'd need to start looking at the upper end of your budget, 300,000, 400,000.
I see.
Or you would go for a little bit less central, but a multi-unit small building, let's say 2-3 floors between 4 to 12 units that could be studios or 1 or 2 bedrooms. And those as well start at 300,000, 400,000.
And then because there's so many units, I'm assuming we don't want to have all of them short-term rental because they won't rent as much.
Well, what most of our clients do is, especially if it's their first investment and they want to minimize risk, they buy a building that's already tenanted, whether fully or partly. And then those tenants would be long-term tenants. So you get a steady paycheck, even though the yield is not as high as potentially Airbnb would be, but you get a steady paycheck from those long-term tenants. And then you start experimenting with the vacant units, renting them out on Airbnb, advertising them for monthly rentals, depending on the location and which property managers we're working with there, we'll work together with them on advice on what would be the best way to try and short-term or medium-term it.
That actually does sound very feasible and more appetizing.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's A-K-I-Y-A-M-A-R-T, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
A small building is the best of both worlds in a couple of senses. Number one, as long as you're complied with the municipality regulations, you've got the creative freedom to do with the units whatever you want. You can rent them out commercially, residentially, short-term, medium-term, it's up to you. You own a much larger land plot than you would with a condo, similar to a house or bigger. So you have the potential for capital appreciation if the location is good enough. And when it's not profitable, you own the structure, so you can demolish it and reconstruct it and turn it into a parking lot or a self-storage, whatever you want to do in that far, far future when it's not that profitable anymore. But the thing to remember, when you own the entire structure and it's not a condo unit, then all of the structural maintenance and repairs are on you. There's no owner union, reserve fund, building management company. I mean, there's a property manager who also manages the building, but you're the owner. You need to take care of any renovations and repairs whenever they occur. So you want to put aside, let's say, 10% of your gross income or whatever it is just to cover for that, unless you have a constantly liquid cash. I don't know your situation.
What is the current, based on the properties that you've worked on recently, what's their current cap rate or yield
For long-term leases on a building like that, that's multi-unit with multiple income streams, net pre-tax, so including all of your purchase and known management costs, not including your tax situation, whatever it's going to be in Japan, depending on your portfolio, and not including any unknowns like vacancies, repairs, maintenance. So net pre-tax would be 5 to 6%, maybe 6 and a bit if we're lucky, on long-term leases. Short-term or medium-term can maybe raise that by about 50%, and short-term can maybe raise that by 100% if it's a very smooth operated, well-oiled machine and the area does really well throughout all seasons, kind of. So like central Tokyo is always popular. It's not a seasonal thing, right? But central Tokyo, to buy a small building or a house, you're looking at way more than 300,000-400,000. That's not going to be so
very expensive.
Depending on seasonality and how good the property manager is and what the general economy is doing and how tourism is doing that year, then potentially short-term stay could maybe double that yield. But those are like the top cases. Normally I'd expect 50%, like in case of monthly rentals at best, more than a long-term residential lease.
So for us, the cap rate or the yield, I usually like it after all expenses, management fees and all the property taxes.
That's what I mean.
And
but the only things I'm not including, only things I'm not including in this percentage is your individual tax situation. So for example, if you own one property, your tax is not going to be so high. Maybe take, I don't know, a quarter or half a percent off that, right? But if you own multiple properties and you start having a significant income stream in Japan, your income tax will be higher here as well, eventually, after you finish claiming your purchase costs and depreciations, etc. So I can't include that because it depends on your individual situation. And the other thing that I can't, I can give you statistics on what vacancy costs and maintenance costs and repair costs are, but statistics can lie, they'll be hugely skewed if you only own one property for, say, a year, and you just happen to have three tenants move out soon after you purchased it. Obviously, those statistics go out the window, right? So I can tell you average, maybe, again, put 10% aside, but I don't want to include that in spreadsheets because that's very... it's very speculative.
No, all of those things I kind of understand. I think so the 5 to 6% is similar to what we're getting here. You know, for our cap rates right now in an apartment complex, and then the 5 or 6% then does appreciate because there's a hard economy happening right now in California and the US. So our rents are either not as stable, or they're actually on the decline in certain areas. So it's even below 5%. So I think we're okay with the yield that you're proposing or you're thinking of.
Well, that's long-term residential, and it'll be very hands-off. It's kind of money in the bank. You'll make, you know, a couple of decisions every couple of months if and when a tenant moves out or changes over. But otherwise, it'll be fairly hands-off.
Do you mind if we, I mean, I want definitely to look at the long-term rental scenario, whether you say, hey, we found a single family home and it's in a great area, it's a great price, let's go with that. Or we found...
I wouldn't go with single family homes. They're not built to last in Japan. They take a lot of maintenance once they get beyond 30 years, 35 years of age. And you're constantly looking for family tenants, which they do stay in place longer than singles and couples, but Japan's demographics being what they are, it's also harder to find a family tenant. It's a lot easier to find a single or a couple without kids. So single family homes, unless you want to take on a really dilapidated Akiya and then, you know, completely renovate it and start, I mean, that could be profitable, but that's a project. Otherwise, if you're looking at long-term leases, depending on your budget, I'd go for either condo units or a small multi-unit building.
Yeah, I think the multi-unit building would be what we would be pursuing then, based on what you're telling me. Now,
but that
what
be
is the
upper
minimum
end of your budget? Yeah, that'll be 300,000-400,000.
So my question is, because we've seen like 4 units buildings, and they were not too expensive. But they weren't in the greatest areas. I mean, we saw some even in Yokohama, even 8 units. But you're right, they were 200,000 to 300,000 US.
Yeah, I go a little bit higher than that to get more central and younger.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if if you can give us a, you know, something farther, that is 200,000 up to 3, then to 4, so we have an idea based on the inventory, and then then we start looking at each of the properties, looking at the areas, and really try to delve into what life is like, what is the success in each area, and then I think we would probably then understand, okay, let's just stick to 300,000 to 400,000, or we're not too comfortable with 300,000 to 400,000, we might be too more comfortable with 200,000 to 300,000. I don't know. It's hard to even nail down a number without even seeing a property yet.
Yep.
But I think your philosophy is great, though. I do believe in the multi-unit, like you said, and the way that you said is kind of what we're thinking of in terms of having it be feasible. It needs to be a multi-unit.
Yeah. So I think, are you, let's say we do find something that ticks all of the boxes, are you ready to purchase, or are we just doing a brain exercise at the moment? Because that depends. I'm not going to loop a realtor in if we're not going to be moving ahead. We'll just keep it in house and do some sample research for you, and then you can think about it and get back to us later. So which stage are we in?
I think the sample research for now, and the reason why is because what I mentioned earlier, the ADUs, the two ADUs that we're building right now, are a construction that's going on. We've been working on that for the past 9 months. So the approval process is almost completely done. The city just has to approve the structures, the electrical, the plumbing. Once that's done, we will get our contractors to start building, and they should be able to, the building's already built. They're just building the two ADUs from internal, and that should only take a month or two. So right now it's almost June. So if we say, let's say in 3-4 months, we're in the process of building, it takes another month or two, that's going to push us towards the end of the year.
Yep.
So I think if we're going to predict that, hey, we're going to have pure cash to work on, to jump on a property within minutes or within days, it's probably going to take us 4 to 6 months.
4 to 6 months to have the money settle, or 4 to 6 months to start searching?
4 to 6 months to have the money ready to go, like right off the bat. But I think right now, what I really want to do is build the relationship, get the searches going, understand the areas, understand that, hey, you know what, based on all the inventory that's out there, it's best to focus on this avenue instead of that one, meaning an Airbnb versus a multi-unit, and then be 100% confirmed by several months from now. And then once we know
multi-unit, if it's central enough, can be Airbnb. That's one of the advantages of it. Again, you can do with the units as you wish.
So I think once we understand the inventory and the search that you're proposing and you're giving us, I think we would have a better idea. So I want to use the first several months to do that.
Okay. So I think in that case, the first step is, even before you hire or engage us or anything, we can put in a couple of hours of free research. We do that for a lot of people. So if you could reply to my last email, just to remind me, because I'm jumping to another meeting after this one. So reply to my last email just to remind me that we'd like to see a sample research of multi-unit buildings within that price range. Make sure that Faye, that you've been in touch with initially, is CC'd as well, because she'll be the one doing the actual research.
Right. I think Hannah, right?
Hannah replied on the appointment with me. I think initially you were in touch with, let me have a look here.
Yeah, I forgot. I thought it was just Hannah.
Oh, no, you're right. No, you're right, because Emil gave you my email address. You know what? Let me do it now, and then I won't confuse you and I won't forget. Give me a second.
Yeah, no, take your time to do that, and then I'll respond to that last email that you're going to send now, and then I'll put down the price range, the multi-unit, and then I can even put down time frame that we will have everything written.
Let me just finish that email right now while I've got you on, because otherwise my brain goes in very different directions.
No problem. It's best.
Please add Joe to our mailing list and run a complimentary research for him. Let's focus on, shall we leave Tokyo out just because yield there is a lot lower than other places, or do you want to look at Tokyo as well?
I mean, for the price range, do you think it's even possible to just have a look, and then if it's way off, then
it's
we say, hey,
super, super suburban and at the higher end of your budget, maybe, but the yields will be lower.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind just looking initially, because if we don't, I would always regret that, hey, we never looked.
No problem.
So
focus on Tokyo, Osaka, Fukuoka, and central Yokohama, because Yokohama can get very rural. And Saitama cities.
Do you think Chiba?
Chiba, I kind of see as a second-tier city. No offense to Chiba. Mm-hmm. It's popular for single-family homes for families and stuff. Mm-hmm. But investment-wise, the population there is kind of stagnant. And I'm not that impressed with it, to be honest. It's a good place for cash cows, but it's not the best. Definitely not the best if you want to consider Airbnb down the track, because not many people go to Chiba City and then commute 1 hour into Tokyo. It's not like Yokohama, which is exciting enough on its own.
Got it.
So your top budget is 400,000 USD, which at the moment is about 58 million yen. Okay, so let's look up to 60, because they'll all be at least slightly negotiable. Budget up to 60 million yen. We're looking for multi-unit small buildings within 10 minutes walk to station, 20 years and younger.
Beautiful.
Please CC me on your search results.
Now, before you send the email, I'm hoping they know to start with the lowest one first, because I don't want to miss out on something that's maybe 200,000.
I see what you mean. Okay, so budget. Okay, let's start with 200,000 is about 30 million yen. So budget 30 to 60 million yen. Please try to include samples in various price points within this range.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, that should cover us, I think. So we'll see what she comes up with. She'll put in a couple of hours, so hopefully she'll, I don't know, 4, 5, maybe 6 listings, if we're lucky, is what she'll find within that time frame. And then that'll give you an idea of what you can get within that range, and we'll take it from there. We'll analyze each of them together and see what the pros and cons are and take it from there. Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top of the list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com.
and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today.
Mm-hmm. Last question for long-term relationship and cost.
Yep.
Is what's the percentage to hire you? For example, let's say we find that multi-unit building. We want to go ahead and purchase it. What is our price that we have to pay for you in terms of commission and then for management after that?
So depending on when you'll be pulling the trigger, if it'll be before the end of the year, we're probably not going to be able to handle everything on your behalf. Full purchase facilitation is going to be difficult for us until we get some more hiring and training. I've got my fingers crossed because we're just hiring a bookkeeper, which was our biggest hassle. But let's assume that we're not going to be able to do that until the end of the year. So if we start with the purchase at that point and onwards, where we can do everything on your behalf, it'll be 3% of the purchase price plus tax, 3.3%. Okay. And then we'll do everything, no hourly limit. We'll talk to the agents, we'll talk to the lawyers. You just need to sign a few bottom lines. Okay. If we start moving before that, let's say we find a property that you really want to proceed with, it looks like a, I don't want to say diamond in the rough, but like a really good deal. In that case, what I'll do is I'll put you in touch with a foreigner-friendly English-speaking realtor based in that city that you're considering, or based in Tokyo if we don't find anyone within that city. They'll be able to facilitate the purchase logistically in English remotely on your behalf, same as we would have done technically. Being realtors, they're more transaction-focused, so they're not going to have the kind of talk that we just have, digging down into strategies and maybe do this, maybe raise red flags. They're not necessarily going to do much of that. So I can come in for a few $100 just to hold your hand, guide the agent on due diligence, review documents before you sign them, that kind of thing. So that we can do at any time, the full purchase facility. But then you'll be the one talking to the agent, talking to the lawyer. I'll be in the chat group to provide feedback and review and due diligence, but you'll be more hands-on in the purchase process. So that we can do at any time. The full purchase facilitation, the 3% will be at the end of the year and later. Management would be either, depending on which property you'll end up buying, either one monthly hour, which is 4,400 yen, or 2% of the gross rental income, whichever is higher.
Okay.
We're not the property managers. Property managers will charge what they charge. They charge 5% of the gross rental income. They have placement fees. We also have a small placement fee when tenants change over. So it gets a little bit more detailed in that. But for us to manage the portfolio is 2% of the gross rental income per property, or at least 1 hour if it's lower than that.
So you said that you would be the property management, or you have to have another?
We use third party, same as we do with the realtors, property managers, lawyers, Airbnb manager. We always manage the managers, manage the agents, manage the project. Okay. We're an added layer.
So the management company would charge me maybe 5%, and then you would charge another 2%.
We always charge 2% or at least 1 hour. The property managers, depending on the type of property, the type of rental, if it's a long-term lease, they charge 5% and they charge placement fees whenever they put new tenants in there. If it's short-term stay or monthly stay, they normally charge, depending on the company, between 20 to 30% of either the gross, including like utility fees and cleaning fees, or the net, the actual room rate, right? So some of them will charge 30% of just the room rate. Some of them will charge 20% of the gross, depending on the company.
Okay.
But they don't charge any, they don't charge any placement fees. They just charge that.
Okay, so the total sounds fair, you know, for what we're getting here in terms of the higher end of management companies and everything. So I'm just trying to understand your percentage, their percentage. So that does make sense. Last question for the multi-unit.
Any yield calculations that we'll be discussing when we talked before about net pre-tax, that would include all of those costs. So you'll know what the bottom line is after they and we charge everything that we charge.
Wonderful. No, that's great. Now, if we have that, let's say 8 units, for example, or 6 unit building, if there's one building, one room that we decide not to rent out at all and we want to use it, is that, do they allow that?
Yeah. What do you mean they? You own the building. You do whatever you want.
You know, I don't even know what Japan thinks, you know, of what they allow and don't allow us to do. I'm so scared in terms of the laws and rules, but it seems like they are very friendly to foreigners lately, in
Well,
terms of
there's
investing.
always this huge gap in Japan between official policy and boots on the ground, right? So the government welcomes foreign investors. They want everybody in. They want the tourists here. They want everybody buying and selling property. There's no legal limitations on ownership or anything of that sort. The problem remains people on the ground. So the government states a policy, but then they can't force the banks to take foreign clients as clients. They can't force a property management company or an agent to work with you directly. So the magic is in between, I guess, and that's half the reason for our existence. And the other half is just to make sure you don't make any costly mistakes.
Is there any big negative things that you've seen or advised people who are investing from, let's say, from the US into Japan, where, for example, hey, we own this property, we own it for 10 years, or it's not working out? I guess the easiest thing is just to sell it, right? I mean, is there any
It's a very liquid
bad,
market, yeah.
right? Is there any bad outcomes or anything that we should look out for in terms of, hey, you know, it might not be a good idea, or it's just like investing anywhere. It's just like me buying something in Oklahoma, for example.
I don't know specifically about Oklahoma, but I once in my distant past had a single family home in Jackson, Mississippi that didn't turn out well at all. The area was not good, the property manager was not good. So here it's a bit different. Most of the people that we work with, the agents and the property managers, are very by the book, again, very Japanese. So there's not going to be too much of an issue with service providers. But if we buy in an area that's not attractive enough, or if we buy a property that's too old and maintenance expenses start racking up by the time you want to sell it, then yes, you'll get less bang for your buck when you sell it. But if we stick to a property that's young enough and consider reselling it before it gets too old, and the location is attractive enough, and barring, you know, any major downturns like COVID or tourists completely stopping to come here for whatever reason, as long as we can get people in there renting it out, investors will buy it based on the yield that they can get from it, and that will dictate the price, same as in your case when you're buying. So most of our clients who have purchased based on our recommendations have ended up selling close to their purchase price, a little bit over, a little bit under, and not too far from it. And then it's a matter of when they sold and how much rental income they got until then.
Got it. So it's not too hard of a process, buying versus selling.
No, it's a very liquid market. It's second or third in the world, depending on capital wise or transaction wise.
Okay, wonderful. I'll just wait for that email. And then from now on, do I just, if I communicate about details of the property, do I just respond to the email itself and then whoever you or her respond with the answers, or how does that work?
So Hannah is my personal admin. She'll flag any incoming emails for me so that I can get to them when I get to my emails, which can take a few days. If you
No
want
problem.
faster responses from me, WhatsApp is the best way to, if you want to just quickly send me a link that you found and say, hey, what do you think about that? Then WhatsApp is where you'll get the fastest response. So the email I just sent to you has my mobile number and my signature. Just add me on WhatsApp or online, whatever messaging platform you like to use.
I
And
use WhatsApp, so I can just
we can
add your
connect.
number onto there,
Yep.
right? Perfect.
So
I'll do
we can
that.
chit chat
Okay.
over there, and for more official instructions, we'll ask you to send those via email.
Okay. All right. And then in terms of anything, I guess this is what we can do in terms of just looking at property in the next several months then. They'll just come
Well, I mean,
periodically.
I wouldn't start looking at actual listings that you might want to purchase before you're, let's say, 2 months bef 2 months prior to ready, funds wise. Because they'll just be gone by then, and we'll end up frustrating our agent if we say, oh, we really like this one, but wait 3 months, and then we keep repeating that agent will get pissed off and not work with us again. So to actually start actively inquiring with sellers and sellers agent and a buyer side agent, let's do that 2 months before you're ready to pull the trigger.
Okay. And is there, because I know there's several platforms for me to look at homes and that type of thing, but not as much with multi-units that I can just go on and study and look at. Is there any
Yeah, the two
sites that
websites, let me reply to your email again just with those links. So
because I
there are
know the
two.
At Home and the other ones.
Sorry?
I know there's two, right? At Home, and there's another one.
There's Sumo, there's At Homes, there's Nifty, there's homes.co.jp, but those are all very generic websites that have everything on them. So it's a bit hard to filter based on investment or buildings. The two ones that are major investment websites are Rakumachi and Cambia. I'll send both to you now.
Oh, okay. That'd be great. Yeah, that way
they're
we can
geared
do our
specifically
own
towards investors, and it's a lot easier to see the numbers in there too. But the numbers you see on Japanese listings, for buildings, I would take at least 2% off the net yield that they quote there, because they don't factor in purchase costs and property management costs.
Okay.
And if you're looking at other types of properties, let's say condo units, for example, I take more like 4 or 5% off the cost that you see there. Okay. So take the yields you see there with a grain of salt, but they should be able to give you a rough idea of what properties look like. And then when we dig deeper into them, or when you send me some listings, I'll explain just the stuff that's not obvious, and you'll end up fine-tuning it yourself. You'll figure it out.
Okay. Are you getting a lot of clients from California? Like, do you even have a number off the top of your head? Are you getting international clients, especially from the US or California, maybe 10 a year now? Or do you have a large volume?
We get contacted by a lot more. I think at least 10, 10, 20 a year become actual clients, I think, from California.
Mm.
A similar number from Hawaii, and maybe half that number from various other states in the US. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Meaning they actually buy the property and then they go through the whole process.
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate your time. I know you're busy.
Pleasure. Great talking to you. So you got both of
Thank
those emails.
So
Faye will start researching for you as soon as she gets to that email. And add me on WhatsApp, and we'll have some chit chats there over listings.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dave. I appreciate your time.
Pleasure. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
So there you have it. A really good, thorough coverage of the topic of property investment here in Japan in all of its various shapes and forms. I was actually surprised at how deep we managed to get on such a relatively short call. Let us know what you thought and where you are on your investment journey in the comments section or wherever you found this episode. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com, and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.